on this issue of Homo Superior.
So, yeah, they have a big fight. Scott's been doing this for a month. He's been checking in with her while she's been overseas. Beast shows up being an extra cock block for no reason.
What's going on in here? You're like, shut up.
Some good lines. Do you love her? I love both of you. So that confirms polyamory in the 97 universe.
Yes, finally.
Or polygamy, I guess.
Well, Brent is gay, and Kaylin's gay, and Clark is gay, and Ryan's gay, and Adam's gay. It's Homo Superior.
Welcome to Homo Superior, where communicating via psychic rapport was our thing, Scott. Issue 326. I'm Ryan.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Brent Wingate. This week, X-Men 97 continues to prove itself a worthy successor to the always brilliant original series with an episode 5 of Game of Thrones level shocking content. And in a Homo Superior milestone, we've made it to this year's Couture 4 in our Mutant Madness fashion run. X-Men's wares are the women that made it more popular. Plus, we have more details about the upcoming X-Men from the Ashes teams. And as always, the comic book issues you know and love. Finally, get ready to have your pussy popped during this week's Plug Me Daddy. Dear God, we can't help ourselves. We will never be famous. But first, some housekeeping. This week, we released our creator crush of Nathaniel Dolquist. He is the creator of Wicked and Hulkling, Love is Power, a fan film that is like in the Modern Family style of Wicked and Hulkling being gay and fingering each other in the shower.
Just, I thought it was really fun. I think it's amazing that Nathaniel was able to self-fund this and really invest his time, energy, and work. I mean, I think he said it took like, you know, hours at a time and obviously some change to turn into Hulkling, and he's been at cons and things like that.
Did he wear the wings in the interview when you guys interviewed him?
No. No, we did.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Are these good?
He specifically had it in his rider that he will not wear the wings.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Sorry, they were in his rider. His name is Michael. but it was a fun interview. You should check it out.
Yeah. Listen to it right now. You can do that at any
time. Stop this right now.
Stop. Yeah, don't even bother to listen to this.
We also have an upcoming creator crush with the voice of Bishop from X-Men 97. It's Isaac Robinson Smith. That'll be coming out in
a
few weeks.
Has he done anything lately?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but this is the oasis upon which our podcast drinks. It's X-Men 97.
Slurp, slurp.
I do have to say, going into the interview and like prepping for it, I was absolutely blown away by how much in video games in particular he has shown up. So has done a ton of voice acting in Spider-Man 2, in
Final Fantasy VII,
the remake and the rebirth, the more recent one. Just like ADRing or dubbing for anime on Netflix, Warner Brothers, like he's all over the place. And as we were putting together, I kept leaning over to Andrew, be like, you'll never guess what he was in now. You'll never guess what he was in.
You would have liked, because we've talked before on podcast about dubbing versus subbing in watching.
I think it's domming versus.
Which is the one where they put words in your mouth? Words. And we talked a little bit with him about like what he prefers when he's watching TV shows. And I thought there was an interesting conversation about like why some acting is underappreciated when they're doing dub work.
And then we'll check it out. It'll be coming out,
sounds
I
great.
Think, by the end of the month, probably.
Because he's time traveling right
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's busy.
Maybe that is already out. Yeah,
the episode is time traveling to when it will be released. It has been released when it will be released, and it fair. Also will be released if it has not yet been released now.
That's tea.
Let's talk MCU Next TV, our weekly segment focused on the latest and greatest of the MCU Disney Plus TV shows. It is the fifth episode of X-Men 97.
Remember it.
Preview
recently on X-Men.
I don't love that Cajun.
That's
answer.
What Louisiana we're, people say.
Yeah, we're from Louisiana, Brent. I think Ryan and I know a little bit of how to do that accent.
Is a part of a traditional Cajun Creole accent to add 8 syllables to the word previously.
Audio.
Previously on X-Men.
In this house, we do not skip the intro because there are always extra scenes, although many of these were kind of reprised, which I thought was really cool, obviously, to connect the dots on who these characters were. We did get some new stuff, Apocalypse versus Cable in the year 3000, or at least whenever that happened in, what is it, Beyond Good and Evil. Dark Phoenix and Lilandra, they keep really hammering that scene home.
I feel like someone needs to like put that together and see like the full scene of what's going on, because they've really, and it's in every one.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this time around they did, we'll talk about it, they mentioned the sort of optic holdover and some mention of the Phoenix, so I can appreciate why that came back. There was Nightcrawler and Gambit fighting the Genosian military.
I was trying to figure out when that was.
I don't think it ever was. Like, the only episode they really have on Genosha was the one where, obviously, Storm, Gambit, and Jubilee are there, but
maybe
they
show me
not
a
really
future
in.
One.
And then, like I said, we got a couple of good repeats. Starting into the story, we got Trish Tilby doing a cover story. She's looking for that nugget.
Finally, my favorite character from the comics has such a prevalent role in this series, you know?
I do love a good, because it reminds me of two in, like, what is it, Young Justice and a few other DC series. Like, it's always, obviously, Lois Lane, but it's always great to have, like, a reporter that's connected to people, and obviously she's a big character, and fallen in love with Beast in the comics.
Yeah.
And so
they blushed.
Yeah,
she
like, starts out pretty hard with the, if it bleeds, it leads style. Freaks, monsters, mutants, they're all trash. We know that. But should we investigate them like they're human beings? Find out later when we talk to the atomic monsters.
But so, it's very 2020, like 90s investigative sort of journalism.
Yeah, we've all seen. Oh my God, there was actually.
It's Barbara Baltos.
Well, no, that's what it is. Yeah. I thought I recently saw a clip of, like, I think there was a 2020 story about a lesbian town where, like, all the people were lesbian. Like, it basically, like, a bunch of people said, let's just start up and take over a town.
That's called Genosha.
I believe that's called Provincetown. And something must be in the water.
But I mean, honestly, though, that's like, that really is how the old school interviews from the 90s used to go about. Here's some weird story that we're going to try to convince you they're human, but we're not convinced.
The thing that freaks me out a little bit about it is that, like, probably in 10 years, 20 years, we're going to look back on our media the exact same way, that there is going to be some blind spot to the way that we've reported on some topic.
I think it'll probably be podcasts.
Yeah.
We then get a little bit more of Jubilee's interview, you know, hands-on learning, Big Death Machine. Cyclops is really putting on the Ritz. Like, I don't know if that's the phrase.
No, it's not.
He's a terrible.
No, you're not hearing the right
putting
phrase.
Putting on the Ritz.
So we jumped into Genosha, Three's Company. We got Gambit and Magneto fighting. You got Can It, You Roosters. And then we arrive at Wakanda. I mean, Naboo. The moon of Endor. It's on the tip of my tongue. It's Genosha.
This is actually
a Wizard of Oz, maybe too. Yeah, it's like, it's very that.
This is actually the location that Party City is named after.
it's very cool, but it did not. And it, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan. You're our expert for today. But like, Genosha never really had this kind of like.
It didn't really like look like this
vibe.
With like the dual,
it's really gorgeous.
The dual statues that sort of look very Lord of the Rings esque.
Yes,
And then a pyramid. That's never really been a thing, like a theme.
And I guess you were like, I mean, it's really interesting because this is, well, you know, this episode is literally just a fucking cocktail mixed blend of like 17 different series references, time periods from the comics, which is it's an excellent episode. But so it's like, it's funny to watch so many references happen, because it does have a little bit of a Krakoa vibe to it, for sure.
And we'll talk about it more, but it's definitely the Genosha and the new X-Men run are very ingrained throughout this entire thing.
The thing that made me so excited about it was
that bird.
It was that there were so many birds. And there was Glob Herman running around having a great time with Pixie and other
Leech.
People.
You got Leech, Nature Girl, Sword of Surge. They didn't really name the
That wasn't Surge. Rainboy was there.
Yep.
We don't know who that bird that turned into that girl with like great bangs.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's not really canon at all. So
Magneto is right signs. Yeah, lots of heavy references.
What is the Hope Barack Obama poster?
Oh,
but
yes.
As a Magneto Freedom poster.
I love that.
And we got to see a poster for Deathstrike nail polish. There was a huge poster that was
I didn't see that.
If you look at the nails are like 3 feet long.
Oh, we need to go grab a screenshot of that. Yeah, I mean, it's again, like, it's tons of fan service, but it's all very much earned and it's all very authentic. So just them using characters that we've never seen in the 92 universe before and, you know, making it feel like, of course it would be. Why would you put random generic
people in? It's kind of weird the way that, like, fan service cameos can work, because if you put in a few, the feeling is that, like, it's empty. Mm. That, okay, fuck you. You just threw in a couple of things as, like, fan service. But when they really dump it on, it feels like you're getting a big
gift.
It's just like, yeah, you're not, you're, each of these items is getting the same treatment as if they were, you know, in a bigger, you know, production or something, but somehow the volume of them is much better.
I felt very overwhelmed. I had to pause it to be like, just breathe.
Well, even trying to rewatch it for this, like, it's, you just need to look in every fucking nook and cranny. Like,
very rewatchable.
There's so many references in this episode. We get Val and Maddie as the welcoming party, the interim or inner council wanted an X-Men. You can spare a gene.
Two are better than one, five better than three. Sometimes.
Sometimes. Like, are you a slut or do you love Rogue? Pick a lane.
What? The two things can be true, I feel like, right?
Yeah, I guess they can.
Val still looks like she's ready to move to that lesbian town we talked about in the 2020.
Yeah, speaking of lesbians.
She looks like she's there to report on the lesbian town and then join it.
Okay, so talk about her, because it seems so obvious that she might be a little bit mystique.
Yeah.
And a little bit rock and roll. Like, it feels so obvious. Maybe Cassandra, she is just not who she is at some point. Like, there's something underneath there.
I don't know how an animation style they were able to make her hair look so thick. Like, it looks like she has dense hair.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Rogue will be a wet bird on a live wire because Nightcrawler's here, that little furball.
I was so glad to see him.
He's younger, hotter, and teleportier.
Love is teleporting. Looks so much cooler.
Yes. The BAMF is perfectly timed and sound. I love it.
The voice is excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The chipper, curt attitude, I think, is excellent.
This is actually,
he's here to help, like, with the religions
working
of Genosha,
with the communities of faith in Genosha. It's very Krakoa. I mean, that's literally what it was.
So he's so great in this, and this feels like a comics accurate interpretation of Kurt, because in the movies we know he's like fucking emo and he lives in a church.
Yeah.
Like, this one feels,
in the cartoon he's emo and lives in a church.
And he lives in a church that he made.
But this feels like everyone's best friend that everyone talks about all the time.
Yeah.
And his accent is just so spot on. I really enjoyed him just calling out Gambit and the rest of the Americans for being theatrical too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Americans are theatrical.
And they do an old school reference to season 3, episode 18 about his fucking murderous monk brothers, which was always a blast. And then we get to the Genosian tour. You got kids being kids.
Kids will be kids.
You got my favorite line from this is just like, it's just like he said it'd be. And he's like, the professor. And she's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Who do you mean? the professor.
This animation style really gives like, what? Whoopsie eyes. Yeah,
it made me laugh. Really, it reminded me almost like a Rick and Morty line and delivery, because it was like, yeah, sure, whatever. gentrification is very expensive. These apples are $10.
Okay, we got to talk about the price of stuff on this island. Has Gambit been to an island before? It is expensive.
Those are island prices. That's correct.
Islands are expensive. You have to bring in a lot of food.
It makes me wonder, though, how did Rogue already have some money? Because she had just that pink money, like, ready to from Mags.
I guess the exchange rate. I don't know. Maybe they gave her some walking money.
They skipped an hour of them at exchange.
The money's not going. No,
we're
going
to have to scan that again.
They're like, no, Rogue, flatten it out. Flatten it out. We do get lots of really fun cameos. So Brett was jerking off to Glob. Ryan, I'm sure you jerked off to Dazzler and Boom Boom. There was also Multiple Man, Exodus, and Cypher. Just so cool. But weirdly, these super powerful mutants, and particularly with X-Men, that the comic book, you had Dazzler throwing that big concert. She's like, yeah, whatever. I'll go to Genosha and do a street concert with a bunch of weirdos.
That was what Mojo was talking about, her other gig. It's so funny that like that's what she couldn't make it for.
She's like, I got to just be in this weird center for like a 15-second performance. Specifically, so Nightcrawler can call out that he knows that they want to fuck. And, you know, Gambit's like, ain't the touch you've been looking for. And then the So Much American Drama. Very fitting, though. I mean, I do feel like more than anything else, the U.S. is...
You're like a soap opera. I don't know what that accent is.
I don't know either. We'll get him one of these days. We get back to the Trish interview. You got Cyclops code switching. You got the cameraman saying, your glasses are fucked up, stupid. Take them off. Trish starts pushing on Jean. And then... we get to the water where Jean is still working on her memories. Mm-hmm. Her and Logan are like really building
what?
Up.
What are they doing?
They're really going on.
This is like the first time that I get it.
What?
Like, I don't understand. It's been a long time to like come around and see Cyclops. It's been longer for Jean,
yeah.
But I never understood the triangle until kind of now. Like, I kind of get where that chemistry is coming from. Logan had a great charisma. He could throw in a great line about sunrises and fucking Jean. I mean, my pussy was as wet as a river that was clearing out.
And he's not wrong. That mug hasn't changed in 100 years or something. Well, that mug is stamped.
I think it was actually what we were doing.
He has a face card.
I think it was what we were doing one of the other episodes, too, that you called out the fact that, like, I mean, she really read all of Wolverine's mind, and this is a woman who's, like, still piecing together memories rather than reality. And I think it's the way they're doing this in the story is just phenomenal. I think it's all like emotionally makes sense. Even Cyclops and Jean having their break makes sense because of the loss of Nathan. Like, just really, really expert level storytelling where it doesn't feel forced.
Well, that feeling memory type thing is something that Scott calls out later. You know, do you love me? And are you living in memories or you actually experience them? How much is this just like a feeling you have because it's new?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's great.
It's and also so dramatic for her to just, and biblical, to go to like part a sea, sit in there and just start reading some of her memories. Just reading them like comic books in the middle of the sea.
Moe's let my people go, Jean. So she does, they do recap both on the Trish interview as well as with Logan, you know, this picnic at sunset. It was actually originally in X-Men number 132, which was the first time it showed up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, she was able to use the power of the Phoenix to hold back or really suppress his power so that he could see all the colors of the rainbow as well as probably have sex. Have you seen the 80s panel? Like, they're laying down to fuck. Like, it is
and see Roy G. Biv.
But this is because I actually never even saw that original panel until I was like going through and researching some of this. But I remember from, you know, even in the Resurrection run, she takes off his glasses and does the power hold.
Yeah.
I think in Phoenix End Song, she does it as well. And then there's also Decimation whichever one. Who's wearing the Super X on his face. She's like, just such a cool recurring thing that I'm so glad they brought through and referenced that it was like an 80s original start.
It came up in the movies too, so it's kind of like a weird correlation from that too.
Yeah. Right, that's right.
They were referencing the movie, The Last Stand.
They were like, James Marsden was fired after the last time I saw him.
And then she pushed him into a lake.
So Jean kisses Logan, as you said, Brent.
Which
and then,
is shocking, I feel like. That was feels great. Like a big move.
Yeah, I actually... Yeah, I mean, big move. I really like how it was played, where maybe a little on the nose of Logan saying this is not what Jean does. Jean is with Scott.
You're Jean Grey. He's Scott Summers.
I think
shows some honor.
There's like an adult, subtle relationship there. Like, if it doesn't progress further, if there isn't a continued love triangle, I think that's a really good way of ending that and saying, look, we kissed, but... It doesn't mean anything. I understand that you're going through a lot right now.
So this episode has a lot of positive masculinity because that's such a great, I agree with you that was such a great reaction. Obviously he's got a little bit of worked up and like, so I think it also shows, we were talking at the beginning of the series, like, oh, he just doesn't sound like he's matured or he's like back at the beginning, but like he's smart enough to like actually be a real person when things come up, and he, because he knows, you know what's right, you know what's authentic and ethical, realistically, because she is in a very heightened emotional state.
He's actually not, the only time he's really unreasonable is when there's children around, because he wants them dead, or when it comes to Scott, like, and he's so emotional when it comes to, when with Gene and Storm and other people, I think he's very grounded, actually.
Yeah.
Also, when they were, like, standing next to each other, Gene is a full foot taller than him, which I really like that they're actually showing that.
Truly,
he's
authentic.
A short king.
Short king spring.
Oh, my God. Okay, so now that made me realize, what a bitch. She literally put water under him to lift him up.
Oh, you're right.
Kept him a foot lower.
She's still always going to be in power. Yeah. And no matter what happens, she's always in power. You know what I mean?
Well, this is what I actually really appreciate that, again, you see in the comics a lot, but we never saw in 92 Jean, was the fact that, you know, Cyclops references the picnic and is just like, she's still the same fiery redhead, you know, kind of shit. I'm like, that Jean in 92 was constantly passing out and only became fiery because she was literally possessed by fire.
Fair, yeah.
So
A cosmic entity. Yeah.
This 97 run of Jean, like even X-Men Red when she came back in the comics, is like very in your face. Like, I'm myself.
I'm
like, I can handle this.
100% that bitch is what she said, yeah.
So back in the interview, we really get into Cyclops was right because we got Trish asking about parenthood. Cyclops starts breaking down. That jerk wouldn't deliver my he called my child a freak, and she's like, why are you lying to me, cunt? And he's like, because you're normal, you're ungrateful, we fight, risk our lives for you. I gave him up because you can't say thank you. The truth is, we're nothing like you. Question: do gay people keep the human race alive?
Hold on, because that's a very fair question. But the line was, thank God we're nothing like you, because if we were like you, you would be dead.
Yeah.
I think that's a great fucking line. I think he's right, because this maybe speaks a little bit less to specifically the gay experience and more to the experience of people of color.
Yeah, no, I was joking.
And I understand that you were joking, but I, as a single gay man,
you're married to a man. You're married.
Not psychically. I have an affair. I have a psychic rapport with someone else. No, but that... There's this great historical tradition, or not great in the sense of it that it's good, but there's a very powerful historical tradition of white racists treating people of color continually worse.
100%.
For the fear that if they got equality, they would turn it to bring back all the sins upon them. It is fucking crazy. It is wrong. And it sets up this awful expectation that anyone who has been oppressed by someone else has to be twice as good as the best of the oppressor. Yeah. It's an absolutely fucked scenario. And I was so, so shocked that Scott was the one who broke in this interview.
Yeah. He did. They're going to edit this around, though, and he's going to look real stupid on 60 Minutes, though. The way they're going to edit this, and he's just yelling at her, and like, I do have a kid. No, I don't. I do. Which one is it,
okay,
Scott?
Okay, so she is.
It's going to be like that.
Is Trish Tilby a bad interviewer or a good interviewer?
They're both bad. Bad interviewer, bad interviewee.
Because she was crazy. She was absolutely wrong with her line of questioning. And then when she goes, he says, like, you know what? He's like opening up and he's being honest.
Yeah.
And then her response was, why do you lie?
Lie to me. I know. No, the line was insane.
Why?
How can I trust you if you lie?
I don't know what investigative journalism they did where they're like, well, there are records of your baby.
Yeah, they were really
Nathan
coming down
born.
On that hospital.
Real gotcha.
And he's... I think he should have just said it died or something.
Yeah, girl, it dead. I did want to come back to your very thoughtful point, Brent, because I know that so Bo DeMeo wrote this entire episode, or is credited as the full writer for it. And subsequently, I know he's come back to social media in some capacity this week to talk about his experience and thought process and writing. And it's like 100% obviously spot on in terms of what he was channeling and, you know, building effectively the U.S. country on the backs of people that are continually shunned and discriminated against. Is just like, it's once again, I don't know how to make this so fucking clear to people that just want lasers and adamantium claws. Like, my God.
Well, having it, especially in the lens of an interview, is so brilliant because when people experience the full force of someone's emotions, that, like, look, I'm fucking tired of saving your lives and you guys being ungrateful assholes, it puts me in the weird position where I have to overcome the social norm of bragging aggressively about how many times I've saved your fucking ass, but I have to do it because you guys have bullied us into this position forever. And they didn't show any, like, you know, of the human responses to that interview, but putting it behind a camera, you know, it's going to be caught up in some way where
100%.
Cyclops explodes on Trish Tilby for asking normal questions about his baby.
Where
is the Summer's baby?
It's so sad because it's like, this is actually their golden age too, of like mutants are in a positive mindset for most of the public, and this interview is only going to hurt it.
It goes back to even honestly real life, where for every, you know, people have exemplified Professor Xavier because of his attack by Gyrex. So there's some level of empathy or thoughtfulness around, we should wait a minute. Maybe mutants aren't so bad. And like you were saying, Brent, any person who lets their bias get in front of them, all they're doing is waiting for some other fucking shoe to drop or something to change. I told you so. I knew that. Like, and it's horrible to really have that experience.
Well, can we get to the inner council on Krenoshagoa?
Yeah, I mean, this is literally
because there's this group. It's
more of a loud council is what I would call it. Like, what the fuck?
It's Sebastian, Shaw, Callisto of the Morlocks, Banshee, Moira, Maddie, Mags, and Emma. Who's Mags in this?
Magneto.
Well, he was kind of on the fence if he was.
Yeah, I mean, but he's there.
But
he
is
seen.
So everyone has pulled him aside basically to talk about, hey, we need a new leader. Magneto is refusing to be the leader of Genosha. And to go back to what you were just saying, Adam, everyone is like, yeah, we would have Charles do it, but he's gone. There's this feeling, I think, that's coming through this season that, like, it's kind of like, we hate the comparison of Charles Xavier to MLK, but I think there's something appropriate here, which is that, like, all the people who used to fight with him and argue with him celebrate a figure after they're gone.
That legacy.
That, like, there are people who are trying to co-opt a legacy into whatever political machinations they've got.
It is interesting that, and this is where I would disconnect the connection to MLK, only because I was like, it's funny to me that, you know, in the comics we have consistently reinforced, and the comics themselves have reinforced, like, Xavier's an asshole.
Yeah.
Where it feels like in this 97 version, it's obviously because he's a martyr right now. I'm interested to see when he does come back, either at the end of the season or the next season. Like, what kind of Xavier are we going to get? Because I think elements of his, like, silliness has shown up in the 92 series. But I think it's why we all grew up thinking Xavier was so great, because so many of us watched the cartoon rather than reading all the comics and some of the ridiculous behavior. And so you're like, well, yeah, he's the teacher. We were also all kids when
we were
watching.
He's so good. Yeah, you just assume. I still just go back to those statues, and I think it's so interesting that they had both Magneto and Xavier, because they didn't agree on anything, but them to be, like, unified as sort of
the,
like,
balance,
the figure piece.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure it's as a result probably more of, what is it, Magneto taking over the X-Men, Magneto making the charge to create Genosha as the country. So, like, it really was because, and I think, what is it, Sebastian said it, which I thought was so great, where it's like, nobody, basically, like, nobody wants to argue, even though they should, that you two, like, you're the reason why we're here today. Like, this was because of you.
Oh, yeah. They fucking hate him, and they're still like, well, thanks, I guess.
And, so then with Magneto believing he's going to take on this mantle, he realizes he needs an ex-woman to join him to balance him out. So him and Rogue talk, you know, making me your queen, thinks you mean we're gonna get back together. Really, again, so many good lines from Magneto this episode, particularly around leadership. So, like, you know, I need to be joined by someone who can touch someone to feel anyone's pain. You're a true leader, an empathetic one. And I thought that was, you know, such a great line. That could easily get lost too, because Rogue in this is like the tank, she's the puncher, she's the this, but they're really playing up her ability to feel in this,
well, we,
this season.
And we also know from the comics that Rogue is a great leader, that she does have that competency. She's got the strength and softness that you would want So tactically, it's a very good choice, I think. Like, if you were in Magneto's position and you didn't want to bang Rogue, like, who would you pick as your, like, number two?
I also think that Magneto's sort of using Rogue because this is known as a mutant that cannot touch anyone, and he's the one other mutant that can touch this one. And so it's a little bit of a power play, and I think it's him showboating a little bit by choosing her because she is... does have this.
Well, this is where the toxic kicks in of the loving you makes broken men whole, even as you deny us. Ooh. Heartache not in vain. I was like, girl, get
a fucking
so
you
therapist.
And Gambit are friends now. The dialogue in this is so good.
A little gaslighty, but yes, no, for the character development, it's just
Magneto's
so
still an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, he's very opportunistic, as you know, anybody at that power level would
be. It's really hard to tell. Which I like, because I think that it does make Magneto more interesting of a leader, that like all human beings, there is this weird thing of, yeah, you really believe in a cause and you're also human, that you have faults all your own. And so trying to figure out which ones he's operating under, I think is great.
Back to the council itself, this is power players that... I did not see this coming. This is very Krakoa age, obviously.
Yeah.
But the reveal of Emma and the things to come with her, I think, is one of the most glaring things from her or from this council, is just like her presence there. You just see like a white glove or some like a side of little fur. And then they don't even show her full frame most of the time. They just show her smiling or her giant breasts. And I just love the imagery that they do with her, knowing that this is about to be a powerhouse, whether a villain or a good guy or bad guy, it's going to happen.
They're leaving it very open for interpretation, which I appreciate, because we actually get a amazing X-Men number 115 reference, but it's not what you think. So we've got Cyclops and Jean, who has her hair down, talking about their kids, getting kind of connected. And who fucking swings that psychic door open? None other than Jean Grey with her iconic line from the issue, "Don't tell me, you can explain." And then to your point about Emma, my favorite is when Maddie comes out of it. They're like, "Maddie, are you okay?" She's like, I just my mind drifted. And Emma, like, right, like little corner mouth shit. She's just like, "Mind drift indeed, bitch."
She is in everyone's head, loving it. Also, for her to be within that conversation where it's very reminiscent of the new Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, so good. It's almost an exact look at that, but it was like Emma and Jean with Scott.
It's so like it's a perfect, so episode is such a good remix of so many concepts and again, that fan service, but in ways you didn't magically expect or to see.
Yeah.
Like you said, Ryan, communicating via psychic rapport was our thing, Scott. Also, this bitch kills Logan. Why is she so upset?
Okay. Well, let's talk about that, because she just did that, and you better believe she's not going to admit that. But, like, she didn't even... Is that not
she's
okay?
Just acting out of emotion, I'm assuming.
People
are hypocrites, and then finding evidence.
Is this the physical cheating versus emotional cheating?
That's very
cheating
true,
thing?
Honestly.
Is that what it is?
I think you're right.
I think it's... Yeah, I think it's more that, like, she can literally see it happening.
Yeah.
Like, if Scott came up and watched as you... Can we maybe kiss under the pond? If Scott saw that, he'd probably be rightfully furious. It's more like signals that their relationship isn't working right now.
Yeah. And so they
subtle signals.
So, yeah, they have a big fight. Scott's been doing this for a month. He's been checking in with her while she's been overseas. Beast shows up being an extra cock block for no reason.
What's going on in here? You're like, shut up.
Some good lines. Do you love her? I love both of you. So that confirms polyamory in the 97 universe.
Yes, finally.
Or polygamy, I guess.
Yeah.
We get Sinister cuts out a part of me and you love it. It's all about ego, like really good exchanges. Yeah. The music's changing and you need a chair, bitch. Like, and she said bitch. They bleeped it out.
That was the hardest line about a children's game. The music's changing and you need a chair. Duck, goose, you're fucking dead.
And just, you know, obviously the playback from Scott to Jean about, like, you know, do you love me? And her going, like, loving you is one of the big things that I remember the most. And he's like, remember or feel. Yeah. And just so fucking good. And then a psychic shot. And then we get back to Then we get back to Gambit and Rogue. Rogue's sad as hell. We get the backstory that we've semi been waiting for, but already kind of knew. So it actually starts with a flashback from a Rogue's Tale from season 2, episode 9, and then expands to say that, you know, Rogue's mom, aka Mystique, took her then to the Savage Land to meet up with, in her Savage Land garb even, to meet up with Magneto. And then we get a bunch of like, very like, I didn't really care about the age gap relationship kind of stuff, but the flashback made it creepier because it's definitely like one of those like old school, old men muse situations where like, he's so smart and I love the professor talking.
Magneto is Jeffrey Epstein and, and Mystique is Giselle.
Oh my God. Still from World War II.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a gap.
We definitely get some more Krakoa references. They talk about, you know, mutant art, fashion, dancing. We see some really purple ass wine. I just had a capture that.
That was so weird. So he was like, what if I made my outfit look like that? Like, it was
like
very
grape juice.
It was grape juice. Yeah.
So they mentioned the electromagnetic protection, which we know is a reference to Age of Apocalypse. Like we've talked about the hurt and the rage. There was not enough room for demons in mine. And then he acted like it never happened. Wiped that away for 92, 30 years ago.
I kind of like it.
I agree.
I like that the way that they framed it. If they had just framed it, he pretended like it never happened. That would have been maybe a little bit unsatisfactory. I think the emotional beat really comes from her saying we both did.
Yeah.
It's she was wearing her Savage Land outfit too, which is just her clothes that they're ripped.
It's kind of just her basketball outfit, but a little bit more torn up.
That's actually really accurate. And I love just showing demons by being like, just like looking like a dog dreaming. He was just like
shaking around in bed.
So Gambit takes all this pretty well.
Yeah. I mean,
he does, honestly. The imagery of them having this conversation where it's a fiery conversation between them behind the fire and then him tossing the cards in, so cool. Mm-hmm. So well done.
Did you notice that it was the Queen of Hearts?
I did.
Because Gambit only plays with cards that are on the nose.
Exactly, better to open. You never wanted to make things official. I'm a swamp rat. And then she's like, I'm a Cher. Your heart may beat for me, but I can't feel you. You light up everything you touch. But never me. Could you imagine if someone...
That was rude.
Yeah,
that was rude. Like, she should have said, like, you light me up, but... I don't
explode.
I want to explode.
There's things you can never take back, and it's that.
You light me up.
Yeah. But again, I mean...
You light everything up, but never me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How long were you keeping that in your back pocket, bitch?
Yeah.
You know, Gambit takes it like a champ. Again, more positive masculinity.
Some could be friends.
Some things are deeper than skin, and lots of back and forth about card plays, and Gambit knows the odds, etc. And he just says, we're going to be friends. We'll be friends for right
That's
now.
That's nice.
I thought it was really
nice.
A true king can take rejection and move on. Then cut us to the end of episode one. I mean, the Genosian celebration.
Oh, God. And they all lived happily ever after at the end.
You know, right. You, girl, we start with a watcher in the sky.
Yep.
We then see.
I watched it twice and I still
You can
it.
See
it. It's right, right as they're going to the whatever gala they're calling it.
The Friendship Club.
In the sky, right before the fireworks go off.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Very gala-esque. Yeah, it's a little bit blink and you miss it, as is.
I thought it was Cassandra Nova in the sky.
Right. Pretty much after that, there is also, I think it was Power of X-Men kind of found it, and they must have watched it like fucking 45 times. There is a literally like 1 second hairline of what seemingly is Bastion.
So, yeah. So when the gala actually starts and all like the multicolored room, he walks by, apparently. And Magneto looks up at him, it looks like, at some point.
Yep. And so,
well, it's like the Zapruder film, but for X-Men.
This is what X-Men fans do.
Well, and it's, I think they've done a really good job.
But why was the guy holding an umbrella at daytime when Kennedy was shot?
Because they've also done a great job of it too. Because if you remember back when they show Bastion with Forge and then the doctor, I forget his name, that Mystique was impersonating, they don't show his face. So you've gotten body, you've gotten potentially hair, and now they might just have to
and
put it.
And now he comes out with a BBL.
And then he'll come out with comedy and looks.
My fingers are crossed that this is going to be the Mephisto of X-Men 97, where like, because, and you know, we'll talk a little bit about who our bets are on of who this actually sent the, you know, what's coming. But anyway, you got fishy fish coming around. I forget what his real name is. There's just like that guy swimming around. I forget his character. Gambit and Maddie talk. Val.
His name's Sammy the Squid Boy.
I'm not even joking. Yeah. And buckle up, because again, Emma serving cunt, McCunt, this entire episode. God. Val, we need to talk. Sebastian, whatever is the matter? Emma, is it your dress?
They got her voice right.
I don't know if that one was that clever.
What's the matter? Is it your dress? Is great.
Because she didn't say both of it. She came, like, she knew. That's talking comedic timing.
Sebastian and Emma just acting as the Statler and Waldorf of X-Men is great for me. Just have those two sitting in the back, sipping on wine, shitting on everyone.
That was so good.
We then get an iconic line from Magneto again. Just so well written in this. Most other nations don't allow a terrorist to be a leader. This is Val.
Oh, yeah.
And so many leaders are terror, allow their nations to be terrorists. Like, it's just, I really fucked that line up. But I just thought it was amazing. And they do it so well. And sadly, that's what we're living in.
I don't know if it's a great argument.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, so. Does that mean we should allow a terrorist to be the leader then?
No, I think he's just...
Every country should be run by a terrorist.
I know what? It's fair to criticize other people, but it's like, yeah, well, you guys are also bad. Isn't a great counterpoint.
To me, it's like game theory? We're all just in the bottom right corner and let's just have a shitty experience.
That's game theory for you.
Rogue bitch shows up. She's wearing a comics accurate dress. We get some Ace of Base.
It was the first date that Gambit and Rogue had together.
I did not
realize. But she wore like a under thing to it, so she went for skin. A
little bit more, yeah.
But she went for skin, which is iconic because she can touch Magneto.
I did not realize people would be so flooded for Ace of Base. Like,
that's a great song.
Sure, it's a great song, and it's like First of the Nation or whatever.
Happy Nation.
Yeah, I don't know the nation.
You're right.
Yeah, that's Ace of Base. Happy Nation, Brent.
Oh, I was thinking Face of Base, the parody Ace of Base band. But I didn't. People loved it.
Well, I think where
everyone was just on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere just being Ace of Base, and I'm like, what the?
Do you? This is Ace of Base's Kate Bush's opportunity. Yeah. So lots of dancing. We get some Archangel. We get Cypher and Boom Boom probably fucking because they're dancing a lot.
That was interesting. Yeah.
Couldn't you? If you're dancing, you're fucking. That's what I always say.
You're dancing, you're fucking.
And I think this is actually where the music really comes into play because Maddie gets a psychic shot. She sees, you know, the Death Master mold from episode 2. Then she sees Gina and Nathan. She or really herself and Nathan, and then she sees rats.
I like the rats. What's that about?
So it was actually when we had posted about the E for Extinction plotline, which is so much of this is drawn from, and it was Taylor the Bookstore Boy, I think is what his name is on, and we met him at Uncanny Experience. He had mentioned, because there's the line from Cassandra Nova of why do we have to worry about bugs or vermin kind of stuff, and so it's I think it's potentially evoking. That it was like a really good suggestion of like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, seeing these rat, you know, as rats,
rats.
Happy Nation slows down. We get some reprise. Rogue calls off for her arranged marriage, and then you just have a lot of Cable screening. Kill the music. Turn off that music. Make that music stop.
Great place to show up, Cable. Right outside where everyone important is not. And screaming, turn off the music at a party.
I'm going to start dressing up as Cable and showing up at people's weddings. Doing that.
I'm going to body slide you under a bus.
We see Mero, actually. She shows up.
I know. Hey. I hope she does well later in the episode.
Lots of green explosions in the distance. I could not. I know we already talked about it, but like it is literally just Game of Thrones septums explosions all over the place.
It's so accurate.
Cable spots Mommy. He's like, you gotta go. And then she's like, you got rust color eyes, bitch. Chekhov's eyes from Scott's conversation.
I know those eyes. I knew you were Cable. I knew your name was Nathan. Wait, are you my son? Body slide by one. Goodbye.
I mean, but and wow. what I loved, and I
goodbye,
don't
mom.
Well, and I was like, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Cable in this series versus the 92, because he's just so gruff and standard, and I love that, like, I'm so sorry I couldn't save you type stuff. Like, just so much more of an interesting development for the character.
He's already more fleshed out than the first
series.
Yeah,
honestly.
Can we pull the goodbye mom and just put that at the end of every episode.
No. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, I mean, no. Sorry.
Body slide by five.
Body slide happening in 3, 2, 1.
Sorry.
Let's party.
Sorry for what? Gaboom. Everything goes fucking nuts. It was actually on Bo's conversation pieces and his stories. He confirmed that this episode was what really sold the revival, and I think we can all very much see why.
Yes. The, you know, 9/11, the Tulsa massacre, obviously, but also he said the Pulse event that happened too. So, I mean, there's a lot of correlations. Of
constant destruction in the face of what should be celebration, should be progress. We see the Wild Sentinel from E for Extinction, Banshee and Marrow get obliterated, Nightcrawler.
But 100%, this
what?
Is
what?
This is classic straight behavior.
What?
You show up and you ruin a party.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
We were having a gay time.
You look like
dancing on the chandeliers, and then you guys showed up.
We were all dancing, and you showed up looking like a cockroach.
Yeah, wanting triple head.
What does that mean, straight person?
What else happened? We've got
the Morlocks get hit. There's a lot of references and iconic panels from Morrison's run in this, particularly like the back of the web. That thing is fucking weird.
It's
looking.
So weird. It looks like a cockroach.
A little bug, I mean, kind of like the extermination
and just spraying out sentinels, and then that big, obviously, those eyes that spray out and just obliterate
identified. You know, you got Val's Hale helping out. She's like, get over here.
I think she's not helping out. She's looking
She's
suspicious.
Like, come here into the laser beams.
She's like, go that way. And then two people get obliterated. I don't know if she's working.
Then have Operation Save the Morlocks. You've got Gambit on a bike. Rogue fierce as fuck. They've never cared for Roulette, and she wants to spice up the rules.
This was very satisfying as a callback to episode one where Gambit and Rogue were talking about how, look, we can crush these Sentinels like they were nothing. It was very fun to see them crush a bunch of Sentinels like they were nothing.
Yeah, they were like trained for it. They were the only ones that could actually do anything because they were.
Well, and Gambit is doing his best Tetsuo from Akira because that fucker is on that speed bike flipping around, laser beaming it up.
The changing of the music.
Did you think he was humming the X-Men theme while he was on the bike?
I thought his radio was turned up real loud and he was just listening to it. Can I just say, so this happened in the comics in New X-Men, Grant Morrison's run, and it was a big event that happened, but you never in the comics really got to see what the devastation was like in the comics. So
it was like one or two pages of just a couple of explosions.
Exactly, yeah. Rogue and Gambit were not there. Obviously, Magneto was not there. So to see like all the devastation happening and them trying to help people hits way harder than even the comic did, which is very rare to do.
I think there's a fine line or there's a hard balance to strike because sometimes people show this level of destruction because they're trying to ape showing devastation. Like there's the kind of 9/11 torture porn from like Batman v Superman, where you're kind of like, I think you guys are just showing me people suffering just to show suffering.
Yeah.
This, I think, feels different because it is so specifically evocative to particular events like the Pulse Massacre that you are grounded in the characters first. They are having a celebration, and that is what is being destroyed. You're showing real lives being ruined.
Lost.
Not just there's an arbitrary number of people who are killed because of this.
Well, because even in the comic, there's like a countdown number that it shows for the reader, but Xavier's experiencing it.
And then later, they don't say how many people were actually murdered, but in the comics, it flat out says 16 million.
There's many horrifying non-shown things with this, where Magneto gets struck by a laser and he knocks over Charles's statue.
Oh.
And then it's going to crush hundreds of people, but they don't fully show that, and you're still like, Jesus Christ, that's brutal.
This is effectively an Invincible just ended, but
these
two showing up together, it's like, wow, they definitely took a few pages from that. Like, it's so much more mature than even the previous four episodes in terms of a, you know, life-death factor. Magneto goes omega over his flashbacks of the Holocaust. He's got that whip train. He's just fucking up that Sentinel up.
And, I mean, they said generically I was in a war previously, and they flat out basically said I was a Holocaust survivor for this. So I appreciate that.
No, it's a really good
upgrade.
And
then using a train as the symbolism to fight back against the Sentinel, that's crazy.
Yeah. So Leech knows Callista will find us or Magneto. He promised Leech he'd never be scared again.
I got fucking really, the second time watching this, I got very choked up because to me, it highlighted this real danger we face today of people like there's a lack of understanding about political promises and social promises that people make, that there are people who are going to rely on you to protect their lives. And if you decide, you know what, I'm not going to honor that promise, you will fucking kill people. So the very real possibility that the Morlocks are once again fucked, they're the fucked over of the fucked over people, that like, that broke my heart that there was a chance that the X-Men could never make it to them.
The X-Men don't care about us.
No. Well, luckily,
thank you, Leech.
Yeah. Luckily, Gambit arrives surfing on a Sentinel head. You got Mask, Eye Patch, Rainbow Thin Lady, the whole gang.
How dare you? I can tell you all their names. Don't do that. Please don't do that.
What is? I always forget the Rainbow Thin Lady's name. What is that?
Don't quiz me right now.
All right. So there's the Omega level threat detected. Mag starts protecting Rogue and Gambit. Yeah. He then says, very sadly, looking into Leech's eyes, "Do not be afraid," in German.
Omega level threat.
That also broke my heart.
Well, and it's,
him showing how much power he had to stop Rogue and Gambit while also protecting Leech.
Yeah.
Well, and it's obviously his original daughter, Anya. There's like a lot of connection to that, like him protecting a child. And it's just, yeah, very devastating connection to think about it. Rogue is seeking revenge. Gambit supercharges that bike with a plan of his own. We get to see actually Bo in the cartoon and also
get murdered.
I know.
That was actually where they removed him from the TV show.
They teleported him into. That's why he hasn't been around. So, yeah, and it was Bo DeMeo as well as X-Men 97 producer Jake Castorena.
It seemed like there were a few very human looking cameos. Like
Kevin Feige was there.
Very real people.
John Hamm, yeah.
John Hamm was there. Yeah. Conan O'Brien.
Gambit is running real fast in this. He really throws himself right up to
that. Where did that staff come from?
He made it with his mind.
Same thing, reason way he powered up Wolverine's claws without exploding them. So he does get impaled, and then he does get impaled. His iconic line, aww, the name's Gambit, mon ami, remember it. Devastating.
Did you cry? Who cried?
I cried a little.
I did.
If you didn't cry just watching him blow that up, you sure did at Rogue's, Lenore Zahn specifically, Suga, I can't feel you.
Aww. And just the first time she can actually touch his skin, too, yeah, without anything happening.
You're dead.
The body.
I don't know how you guys feel about like the run so far. There's so much stuff that's really great. Mm-hmm. I do worry a little bit about the pacing, that it feels like we're rushing through a lot of things that probably could be mined for some more emotional beats. Okay. I will say, though, episode to episode, the amount of recovery of characters I have not liked has been staggering. I used to hate Mojo and Jubilee, and now I only strongly dislike them.
That's good.
Gambit and Rogue in this were great.
Yeah. Phenomenal. It's the best written Gambit I've seen in a very long time, whether it's in the comic, and certainly better than the cartoon. And I think Rogue, they've firmly established these as the ensemble cast it should be. Because even in the cartoon, it was still usually laser focused on like Wolverine and anything that the kids would buy. And I think this is such a holistic ensemble, the way the best of the best X-Men comics read.
So Cable, his warning before he gets body slided, says he's coming. So who do we think it potentially is that set up this attack?
I mean, given that they showed, Apocalypse? I don't know if the Cable Apocalypse reference in the beginning is to qualify just that that's Cable. Right. In my mind, I do think the Bastion thing is real, just given all the little Easter connections.
Yeah.
I wonder if by the end of the season, you know, is Bastion the big bad for this? Because episodes 8 through 10 are supposed to be absolutely insane, is what keeps coming up.
The three-parter is going to be loco.
And then, I wonder if it will be revealed that potentially Apocalypse is the one who sent that sort of Sentinel attack, because he's preparing people for the survival of the fittest kind of idea.
I mean, can we talk just in general about how crazy this episode was?
Yeah.
That the assault and murder of hundreds of thousands of mutants is like one of the top 10 crazy things to happen during this episode.
I know.
That there's like this whole like deep Gene, Madeline, Scott romance thing. There's Scott saying, fuck you on camera, showing his asshole and saying, lick this.
Yeah.
It was effectively two different episodes again, and like just to, it's like it's 15 minutes, like it's Adventure Time length episodes that managed to cover so much emotion, so much development, and so much storyline.
Yes,
I do agree with you that it's moving fast. My only wish is that it was episodes were 45 minutes, like Invincible is.
Yeah,
because it is so good. It's almost too distilled down drama. Like, I do want a little bit of expansion in certain areas.
I agree,
but the fact that that's been cut, it is absolutely incredible how it moves.
For you to go on that roller coaster of feel four very different emotions through a 30-minute animated show by Marvel. I mean, let's be honest, their shows haven't been great. But so obviously time travel plays into this, right?
Yeah.
And a lot obviously.
Oh, you think? Did your mind body slide that thought into your head?
So there was a lot of deaths in this one. Do we think through time travel? Are they going to be going back to this major event? Obviously, it's...
I think Cable said something along the lines of...
I'm going to come back, Mom.
I failed again.
Mm.
So I think this is like...
I don't think he did say that, actually.
Oh, I don't know anymore.
No, he says that in the next episode in the future, but he came back to the past, and you've already seen that episode.
Okay, Cable is a Skrull. I think this has happened before.
Yes, I think so. I think we might see some of these scenes happening again
with a different
where
outcome.
Magneto doesn't drop the statue on mutants. He drops both statues on mutants.
Yeah. I mean, Gambit can't be dead for long. As much as I love the impact of it, it's also X-Men.
Well, but I talk about a way to introduce Nightcrawler, hopefully for the rest of the season,
100%
as an X-Men.
So Gambit's off the team because he's dead. Magneto's off potentially, but he'll be back probably. But like Nightcrawler's on the team now.
I feel like you saw the theory. Leech was the one who shut off his power, so it looked like Omega level.
Yes, which would make sense. Yeah.
Yep. Very fitting.
All right, let's talk real quick about the X-Men 97 number 2 comic by writer Steve Fox and artist Salvador Espin. It's still a pre-X-Men 97, the show, but Scott learns that he's going to be a dad. Logan pouts that he can't be Jean's daddy. And a veritable who's who of who is who of the Sinister Seven villains attack the mutants right where they're vulnerable, which is literally wherever they are on Earth. Scott and Jean, I guess Beast as well, are in the X-Mansion where they fight.
The fucker is always just randomly in the corners of that mansion.
So my main question going forward with all these
agoraphobic
is who the hell is this? Who is Hazard?
Don't ask who Hazard is. Okay. He's not a big one.
All right, Bishop, Jubilee, Gambit, and Rogue are in the Blackboard where they're attacked by drag queen Sienna Blaze.
she had a small role like in the early 2000s as well. She also
she's a big fan. Like people like her, and Steve Fox loves her.
It's the design of her rather than her character development.
She has
probably
like a little bit of a pyro look.
Kind of like a pyro boom boom sort of.
She's
like
got those
merger
blue blockers on.
So
driving her van.
Logan and Aurora are in a bar. And then it's Sabretooth and the Marauders featuring Riptide, Prism, and the other two quirky characters who didn't get named.
Was Harpoon. No, sadly, Harpoon is an actual name of a character.
You thought he was going to do the action of Harpoon, but his name is Harpoon.
Oof,
yeah.
That's rough. Also, we got a bonus morph as Sabretooth.
I will say the one thing that this issue, it was like enjoyable to read. It's obviously mostly like, I'm glad that all of it's taking place beforehand because I would assume they weren't going to be able to connect all the story dots and release schedules on time. What I did appreciate is that this reaffirmed for me this sort of evolution of Wolverine's character again, because of course he would regress when he thinks people are either going to leave. But on top of that, he's also learns that she's fucking pregnant. To have to grieve through that process, even if you don't think they're ever going to fall in love with that person or that they're going to fall in love with you, the concept that like, oh, that door is officially closed because of a child and other things, it just all makes sense to me from a context perspective.
I want to storm out of a mansion, be really sad, and go to a bar, and Storm shows up and comforts me.
But she, right, so you storm, you storm out of a mansion upset, and then Storm storms out of a mansion upset.
As long as there's storming going
on. All right,
let's
move on to Mutant Madness real quick. Last year it was, she's got the look. She's got the look. This year it's X-Menswear.
X-Menswear.
Mutant Madness is on its sixth week, and it is blazing hot.
It's so hot.
You can still vote for your favorite looks for Cyclops, Bishop, Wolverine, and Angel via Twitter on Home of Superior X and Instagram at Home of Superior Podcast. We started with 64 looks. Some would say it was too many. By some, I mean Brent. but now we are down to the couture four.
Great name.
Y'all have chosen the best looks for Cyclops, Bishop, Wolverine, and Angel. They are the Krakoa era Cyclops, which is his blue in kind of the Revolution pattern. Mm-hmm. It is the Red Marauders look for Bishop, which is, I guess, sportswear. Like, if you went to Lululemon as
athleisure.
Bishop. Yeah. It's Wolverine's black and tan look, and Angel's...
Brown and tan, yeah.
Oh, sorry, brown and tan. Never mind. It's not a...
Beer. I was gonna say, yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah. Or like a smoke.
It's not like a Guinness with a pint of.
Oh, that's like a mild.
Yeah, and then Archangel,
the original,
yes,
crazy,
the original blue face,
old funfetti, as I like to call him. All right,
he's ready for a party.
I want to get Ryan from you.
Yep.
Who wins the couture four between Krakoa Cyclops and Red Bishop?
For me. I've never loved Cyclops's. It's sort of been just the same thing all over
head
and
condom.
Over again. Head condom, yeah. I'm not a fan of those.
He's got a good dome. Like, if Cyclops went bald, he has the head shape for it.
Well, also, yeah, he does. That's
I like
true.
My head,
but
wear, like,
I
like
great...
my condoms. None.
my vote goes for Bishop. If we're just down to
really,
that's yes. my favorite. I yeah. want it to win.
This is the most streamlined. It's the updated version of what he looks best as,
gorgeous.
And by that, the only thing iconic he wears is a bandana around
that's
his
true.
Neck. So and this is the best bandana look.
Listen, I think
Battle of the Bandanas.
I think the Krakoa Cyclops is great because it keeps to his blue color, and I really wanted Revolution to win, but if it can't, this is a good cheap substitute.
Okay.
I didn't mean to call it cheap, but it's garbage.
She's mad. Yeah.
I am mad. I am mad because my looks didn't win, and I'm bad at choosing fashion.
Well, no, I agree. It's the reason why I want Bishop to win for that Marauders look is I don't think I voted for any of these or in a way that I wanted them to win. I think they're all very...
Well,
like,
so where did you put brown and tan Wolverine?
I hate that fucking costume. It's more fitting for than the blue and yellow, but
do
I...
Do you like it more than Archangel's look?
No, I want Archangel to win. I mean, that...
What?
I think it's... Because it's there's something different
oh
about
God.
It. It's a, I do think it's very nostalgic, so I'm certainly calling out my bias.
You know what it is?
But it looks
it
fun.
Looks crazy. It looks so insane.
It does.
It's such a wide swing for a look that you're kind of like, okay, you did it. Because he just looked like a generic white dude with blonde hair. And then they turned him into this.
I feel like it
looks
like
crazy.
It looks like Spider-Man 2099 before Spider-Man 2099 happened.
Yeah, that's fair.
Pretty good connection.
So who do you guys think, who are you putting on to win it all?
Marauder's Bishop, even though I know it won't. I think black and
I think black and tan.
What is it?
Oh,
brown
and tan.
Yeah.
But again, it's not a beer. But you know what it is? It's extra. Extra, extra. This is not the right way of doing it.
Extra, extra is our weekly segment where we dish about the gossip, news, and rumors from the worlds of X-Men and MCU. And it's going to be extra because we're gay and annoying, so fuck you. That was in Clark's voice. So this week, a lot of X-Men news. It's been blowing up all over the place. Three new series were announced. We knew that these series were going to come out, but the creative teams and the actual teams itself have come out. This is a really exciting time because one of the things that you do as an X-Men reader is like you wait to see who's on the fucking team. They always reveal it, and you're like, yeah. Oh, is my favorite going to be on there? So it's an exciting time, especially with X-Men 97 coming out. First and foremost, we knew that Jean would be back. There's a new Phoenix series starting by Stephanie Phillips and Alessandra Miracola. This is the writer of Rogue and Gambit, which we reviewed actually on the pod. And basically, the mission statement is Jean will be going to the stars
Love.
To fulfill a little bit more of
no,
her
we,
journey.
We didn't interview Stephanie Phillips. We interviewed Stephanie Williams.
I didn't say that.
What
no,
did
you
say?
Read.
We read. Oh, we read.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said interviewed.
No.
Wow.
No.
That's egg on your face.
No, we
well
read.
That's some cum on my face.
No, we just read Rogue and Gambit on the pod.
You're right. We did.
But yeah, so she's going to be going to Star Shows, which makes sense because she's going to be doing a little bit more cosmic-y type of stuff.
What do you guys feel? We knew she was going to be around. How ups and downs.
I love it. I'm excited for Jean and Phoenix to have their Scarlet Witch moment, like the current Orlando run. I just think putting her in a position of power, in a position where, yeah, she's the focus. She doesn't have to think about other people and all the stories that they have about her.
And all the interesting things they're doing.
She should go to other planets. She should see the Star Drammers. She should meet up with the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. That
makes
sense.
Resurrect all of the broccoli people so we can stop talking
about it. Yeah, that's a good idea.
That sounds delicious.
She killed them all. I'm assuming there's some magical way that she can just bring them back from when they died, right?
Yes. And then the next series that was announced was X-Force. This is Joffrey Thorne and Marcus Two.
Well, we didn't actually interview Joffrey Thorne.
No, that one we did.
I just want to be clear.
So this is going to be a Forge-centered book, and then we're going to have the cast of Rachel, Betsy, Sage, Surge, Tank, and we're going to have rotating guest stars. We're going to start with Deadpool, because it's not a X-book if Deadpool doesn't make an appearance.
What about Sage? Is there going to Sage?
Did I say
no, Sage? No, I'm no. Just like, it's so weird that there's so many S-G-E.
It sounded like a tongue twister. Tank, Surge, Sage, Sage, Sage. Deadpool, Tanks, Tots, Bates, Beds.
So we get Rachel Bets. And we get Rachel and Betsy
love.
In this. So there's going to be some gay stuff, which is really nice. And then it kind of looks like the writer just said, I want a diverse cast of different hair colors. Yeah. So Sage, black hair. Surge, blue hair. Tank, no hair. Betsy, purple hair. Rachel, red hair. Wow. Yes. Diversity, finally, in the X-Books.
I do love that they're bringing, like, adding in new people, or not really new, but certainly ones that have not been developed, like Tank, because he was in what?
He was in one issue of Ironheart where he dies, and basically he has a power. We don't know if it's his suit or his actual powers, where he opens up a portal and he was trying to suck them into it. And he just got an endless loop of being sucked. So we don't know where he is right now.
Oh.
But he's like this scrawny little guy that just goes, I'm Tank, and just blows up and goes big. So it's weird to have one appearance by that.
I mean, he seems hot.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Into it. And then the last book that was announced this week is NYX. So this was a book that came out in the early 2000s.
About cosmetics?
No. It's about the people that...
I love that.
It's about the people that gays in D.C. dated. They're my NYX.
That's amazing. So this one is by Colin Kelly and Jason Lansing. So this is actually the writer of some recent Marvel books, but Colin hasn't done too much for Marvel. So it'll be exciting to see where this goes. And the cast itself is going to be Miss Marvel. So this will be her next book.
Love it.
Laura Wolverine, Sophie Cuckoo, just one, baby, just one.
Yeah.
Prodigy and Anole, or Anal for our real fans. this looks like a very interesting book. They said this is going to be a little bit more slice of life in New York. It's weird. It feels like a very queer book and a very
Sex and the Mutants is what I mean.
These are we have Anole and Prodigy in it.
Love
and
that. This is a cool cast.
Queer writers, and I kind of wish that was the only thing. But it looks fun. So Laura Wolverine is the only original one from the original NYX thing. But we might see some of the supporting cast.
Well, there's a lot of turnover in the city.
There is, yeah. People like, it's tough in the city.
Look,
you know?
If you can make it here for 2 years,
you'll make it.
So what neighborhood do you think they'll be living in?
Definitely something further than Brooklyn.
There was a place called Mutant Town back in the day, so maybe they'll take up that again.
Hey, leave Queens alone.
Oh, what about the Krakoa of New York, Staten Island?
I'm very excited about this. They try to reboot a sort of newer X-Men or young X-Men teams a lot. This feels like a new way to go about it and kind of bring a little bit more like personal stories to these younger generations.
I'm definitely
really nice.
More excited from the news of these three like add-on series than the flagship. It doesn't mean I'm not like interested to read the flagship, especially with the creative talent attached to it. But there's just, especially with the Krakoa era, like you want a little bit weird. You want a little bit kitschy. You don't want the standard like X-Men mission breakdown. So I'm just excited to see more of these for sure.
All right, ready to move on to the issues?
Let's do it.
It's our weekly recap of all things X.
Oh, I thought I was going to
do it.
Well,
hey, go on, baby. Why don't I just run and I just...
Guys, what are your issues?
I want to do
it. Go ahead.
We're going to... Because I want to hate it or hot of this bitch.
Guys, say it at the same time.
Okay. The issues are, never mind.
Yeah.
You go.
I'm very bad at improvising. It's our recap of all things X, as well as the things we're picking up from the new Ultimate Universe. This week, we have Resurrection of Magneto number 4, Invincible Iron Man number 17, Miss Marvel, Mutant Menace number 2, Wolverine number 47, X-Men and Unlimited 134, and Ultimate X-Men number 2. So as I said, we're running out of time. We got to do a hated it or hot at it.
Yeah.
But if you have any bonus stuff you want to throw in that you like, please throw that in.
All right,
so let's start with the Resurrection of Magneto, number 4, writer Al Ewing and art by Luciano Vecchio. Magneto has fully returned from the land of the dead with a new look and a fresh perspective on who he is as a person. The Stark Sentinel tech really flexes how powerful it is and unpowerful it is, because it can sometimes kill Storm, sometimes can't.
Yep.
What's going on there? I hated it, hotted it, then go.
I hotted the full issue because I think inside of Magneto's mind, fantastic writing, him crushing them up into weird, the Orcus people into little balls.
Yeah,
by
he's
got to
beat the
system.
Circuit by, yeah.
So fucking cool.
Put him in a roast, it looks delicious.
Even the mutant circuit worked. I got so pissed at this because of the power level fluctuations of Stark Sentinels. I mean, we just read the Avengers last week where they tore through millions of them, essentially.
Yeah.
That's my only note. There's just too much. There's too unfocused on how powerful it is.
Hotted it. Best of the week. I love where he was basically doing the beginning of Clueless, where he was going through his different outfits in the beginning with different hats and stuff like that. Love it.
Where they had a fashion model of montage.
It was great.
I hotted it. I think I honestly could have 6 issues of Magneto and Storm just reflecting on their lives.
So cool. And Adam being in there too. I just love him.
If there was zero fighting and it was just them thinking about things, I think it'd be great.
Fantastic.
All right, Invincible Iron Man number 17, writer Jerry Duggan and art by Pat Zercher. After a battle with his inner demons, that is all the people in his life, good and bad, Tony Stark faces his outer demons, that is Faith Long. And learns that Stark Industries is experiencing what every underpaid creative is currently worried about, being replaced by AI. Magneto shows up to lend a hand. Did you guys, after a prior issue of Resurrection or of Invincible Iron Man, where he's just punching a bunch of Sentinels.
20 pages.
Did you hate it or hotted it?
Hotted it because the last one was so bad that I enjoyed that there was dialogue and actual things going on now.
Yeah. I thought it worked. I thought it was creepy. The whole the life experience, like therapy
all
session.
All the spirity type.
Yeah. No, hotted it. I think it was a good way to continue to wrap this up.
I will say hotted it because kind of spirity stuff, Iron Man kind of reflects on the fact that, like, look, when you fight villains, you are kind of responsible for whatever happens to them after. So that kind of awareness about being a superhero, I love. Going on, Miss Marvel, Mutant Menace number 2. The writers were Iman Vellani and Sabir Pirzada. The art was by Scott Godlewski. Teleporter and intergalactic superstar Lila Cheney needs the help of Miss Marvel to do the most important thing someone can do, find more fans. Mojo has kidnapped people, which somehow doesn't affect his ratings or whatever he needs to live, because they're strapped to a chair and forced to watch his version of TikTok called Midge Moj. Are you guys furious? Hated it or hotted it?
Oh, God. What was this?
If you had a Midge Moj show, what would it be?
This exact one, actually. This is what I pitched.
I think mine would be... there's a bunch of like terrible food videos where they like, they slap down food and then they slap on cheese and they slap on something else and they're just like making garbage food. Mine would be that, but Beasts of the Universe.
mine is this podcast with editing.
Yeah. So I hated it or hotted it.
I think I was like lukewarm. I think hate it.
What would be an in between for hated it and hotted it? Warmed it.
Hotted it. No, it's good. I mean, again, I think it's overall quality. It's just like, it was just kind of like a fun issue. It didn't like blow me away. I'll hot it.
I'll give it a hot it because we need to see more of her. So yes.
All right. Wolverine number 47. I forgot to write down the writers.
It's Victor Lavelle, Benjamin Percy, and the artist is Geoff Shaw.
Great. Back.
Geoff.
Think back to the great Sabretooth Wars, whenever those were supposed to have occurred.
Yes.
Laura Wolverine escaped with a Sabretooth neck stump. Graydon Creed is back with a new look and a new name, the Bad Seed. And the Exiles saved Wolverine by putting Sabretooth in a Death Seed. Was anyone expecting the Death Seed to work that way?
Just be a giant plant.
It's a lot of seed play in this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of seed.
Of bad seeds.
This is for seed guys for sure.
I hated it. I'm ready to get off this ride, this carousel we've been going around for a while.
Now that we've gone over the hump of how it's kind of wrapping up, I would also I did hate it because I was sort of just like, okay, we're reaching the conclusion of a storyline that never really mattered in the first place. So that's the only frustrating part.
I'm giving it a stalled hot at it because I think that when I go back and reread Sabretooth and the Exiles and then read the Sabretooth War, I'm going to like it a lot more.
Yeah,
altogether.
It's all high-quality content. Just it feels inconsequential.
All right, X-Men Unlimited Infinity number 134. The writers were the Steves, Steve Fox and Steve Orlando. Artist was Nick Roche. Solemn fights Gideon and Burke. Externals, who are trying to do anything but figure out how important compound interest is over time. Shatterstar, Sunspot, and Trinary infiltrate the building with the power of hacking. They're in.
Mm-hmm.
Hated it. Hotted it.
Love Solemn. He can do no wrong. Gideon, it's fun to just see the externals like doing stuff because I used to remember the Gideon action figure back in the 90s and I used to have him like swinging arms. So I'm just like, oh, he's like a real person and a character.
I think that the Steves have really figured out fuckboy energy and they know how to write that. So I'm a hot at it.
Yeah, Solemn was great. Also, they utilized these unlimited ones were supposed to be so cool because you could like scroll down. And they actually utilized that through the art this time, which worked really well for the story itself.
All right. Lastly, Ultimate X-Men number 2. Writer and artist was Peach Monoko. Hisako, a.k.a. Armor, is just a young mutant trying to understand her powers when she meets this Ultimate Universe's Storm named May. As they try and figure out who is death noting all the people around them, it's the Shadow King probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
100%, yeah.
The art in this is incredible. Hotted in it.
Yeah. I think we talked about it being more driven like a manga, so I would love to see like 12 issues of this at once versus like kind of what it feels like a weekly in a Shonen Jump. I think it's gorgeous, and I just am interested in the story. I would hotted it as well.
It moved a little bit faster. Obviously, hotted it. I love this story. I love a different point of view. It's not just fucking New York City people hanging out. Yeah. So, good take on it. As always, we like to wrap up with the little something we call Plug Me Daddy, where each of us get a chance to quickly highlight something we've read, seen, heard, and wanted to share with you, our little homos. What you got, guys, today?
For some reason, Amazon Prime decided to release all of the episodes at once of their new series, Fallout. And it is great.
It good? Oh, yeah. Good
it
thanks.
Is so enjoyable. Oh. It gets so dark so fast. And the thing that I love the most about it is how transparent they make it that the 50s style aesthetic of the technology is just, it's kind of coincidental. Like there's nothing about our aesthetic today that means that because we're technologically advanced, we couldn't look like that. Style? Oh. I don't know. I think it's a very fun, jarring thing.
Yeah. I heard it's very... Andrew's been watching it without me.
A lot of the creators of it really enjoy it, too. So, yeah. Which is always a good sign.
It seems very authentic. There's slow motion. Like all the bits of the video game are in the series. The comedy, I'm very excited about it.
This week has been very stressful for me. So I was like, what is going to get me? What is going to center me? What is going to calm me at the end of the night? So
Time tea.
I was in the Amazon Prime. It's not that. Amazon Prime app. And I said, what else is around here? What's in my wheelhouse? Dance Moms is a show from 2011 with Abby Lee Miller. And she has a dance studio and she yells at these between 3 and 12-year-old girls.
Essentially everyone, though. Moms.
Every mom has like a Karen haircut. It's one of the most wildest shows I've ever seen in my entire life. It's very of a reality time that has gone and passed.
When Tyra roamed the earth.
when Tyra was a talk show. One thing I just want to give you as a little nugget is she'll always put together these pieces. And they're so psychotic. She's like yelling that they need to get this choreography right. And she'll be like, so we have to do this piece. It's called Where Have All the Children Gone? It's about kids being murdered. And then they just like do this like gentle dance. And it's so wild what she puts together. She's like, we're in LA. We got to do one called La Queefa, which is literally just, it's Shangela that they do like a dance of that. And Shangela shows up. It's a wild show.
There's like 30 episodes in the season.
So much content.
Lifetime.
I will plug, or I just talked about on this podcast, if you are not watching Invincible, you're fucking stupid. It is absolutely incredible. The second season just wrapped up.
Fucking idiot.
So good. Yeah, we'll actually be...
You're already watching Dance Moms. You're in the app. Go to Invincible.
We are going to be doing a Secret Records about it, so super excited about that. But yeah, start catching up now. Absolutely excellent. So well done. Cannot wait for more.
That's been our episode. Yep. Rate and review us if you like us. If you like all of our X-Men 97 content, let us know. If you want us to do more of something else, get in the comments. Let us know.
Let us know.
You can check out our most recent creator crush of Nathaniel Dahlquist. I highly recommend it. And watch out Hulkling and Wiccan, Love is Power. You can find us on Twitter at Homer Spear X, Instagram at Homer Spear Podcast to rate our Mutant Madness X-Men's Where's the Women.
You know, and
it's great.
We want to be like Magneto. We want all of our fans to just gather around under a statue of us and we crush it.
Yeah, yeah, the end of Mutant Madness is that we send a giant cockroach sentinel to laser
to
all
your home.
It will destroy your opinions in your thought and in text.
Oh, no.
And you can also check us out on Reddit at Home Spirit Podcast. Give us that sweet karma. Mm-hmm. Or fight about Love Island.
Yeah. Tell us about Dance Moms. Yeah.
That's been our episode. Bye.
Bye.